Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
With the first pick in the 2024 NFL Draft.
Welcome back into another episode of the Dapped on Draft podcast. We're now 5 weeks done with the college football season already. Approaching that midweek point already, where that means that the NFL draft class is starting to solidify itself. We have a big enough sample size on some of these prospects to write some beginning reports, maybe even some final reports on some of these smaller school guys who have played the biggest competition they'll play all year. So we're getting to the point where we're starting to understand who these guys are and who they can become. So that's an exciting part of what we do. And, you know, every Monday episode, we're going to dive into some helmet stickers to talk about those week five standouts. But again, I can't do that by myself. So as always, Dalton Miller at Dalton B. Miller, welcome back. How was your weekend?
It was good. I got to experience Red Zone for the first time just by itself. I've always watched it like alongside other games or, you know, when I was doing stuff at PFN, I was doing NFL stuff. So I had to watch every single game. And so I listened to Scott Hansen all the time while watching all of the football that I could. But I actually got to just sit down with the family and turn Red Zone only on for the NFL on Sunday. And it was fantastic. I also got a bunch of tape up throughout the weekend. I kind of got all of that done, all that stuff with the Patreon done yesterday. So I got to sit down and watch a bunch of quarterback tape today and wrote about Cam Ward. We're going to talk about Cam Ward. I'm going to write about Jalen Milroe and Carson Beck tomorrow, I think. So I'm getting back on the riding horse. I really missed it, and it feels good to be back on that horse.
So two-part response to that. One, I don't think I've ever just watched Red Zone. Like, I usually watch a game that's on and then have Red Zone off on the side. I've never just, like, had Red Zone on, and, like, that's what I was consuming. That's always the off to the side, so I like peripheral, so I can understand what's going on around the rest of the league while I'm watching one of the national game that's on. Yeah, that's a bizarre experience.
It was a bizarre experience, but it was fantastic because you're literally just getting action the entire time, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah. Two, I don't know if you feel this way, but man, I am not enjoying the NFL product this season. I don't know if you feel that way, but like, I just want to watch college football this year. Maybe it's because the Browns are awful and they have no soul. And like, this is the least fun I've ever had watching Browns football, which says a lot when they went 0-31 less than 10 years ago. Or 1-31 less than a decade ago, but maybe that's part of it. But I'm just like, the NFL product is just so much, or the college football product is just so much more exciting. The pageantry is so much better, where the NFL is just like, oh, okay. Like every game is like 17-14.
Yeah. So this is like the first time I don't have to watch it. So I'm not watching as much NFL as I have in the past. And I am really focusing on college football on Saturday. And then I was kind of just watching a lot of tape on Sunday. And, you know, by the time the NFL starts here, it's 6 p.m. and your boy likes to go to bed quite early. So I'm in bed by 9 o'clock anyways. So it doesn't really matter. You know, I'll watch some of the bigger games, you know, the game in 40. The next day, but that's about it. I'm not really consuming nearly as much NFL as I have in the past, and it feels fine for me. I'm having a lot of fun with college football, so let's get into it and start talking about it.
Yeah, so obviously the big game that we talked a lot about last week, as well as Alabama-Georgia. Another big game was that Friday night game of Miami and Virginia Tech as well, which was a thriller, an absolute thriller. That came down to the wire to a Hail Mary that was called a touchdown, then reversed after a review that gave Miami the win. But in those two games itself are three quarterbacks really that we probably need to spend some time talking about. Just again, I think we are so starved to try to find a quarterback in this class. We are so starved. And I saw, I'm not going to say the name, but I saw a tweet from a guy who has a national job who said, hey man, this quarterback class is turning out to be a pretty good one. And I'm just like, I could not disagree more. No. I could not disagree more. And so like, we're just so starved for it. And we see, again, we talk a lot about the social media dopamine hits. And a lot of these quarterbacks are filled with the one in particular, the Miami quarterback that we'll spend some time talking about in particular. His dopamine hits are off the charts, off the charts. Like the spectacular plays that he puts on tape are like amazing. If you are just watching the highlights, like it's the Michael Penix last year for me. This was Michael Penix last year for me. If you only saw Michael Penix highlights, you thought he was the best deep ball thrower in the entire world. And then you watch every single throw that he puts out throughout a year, and you're like, wait, this guy's only hitting on about 55% of his deep balls, on target on about 55% of his deep balls. And so that's the way it is with quarterback play as well. And why I don't like to even adjust my rankings until I get at least five games, like a five sample size game where I can have, like, I can really dive in and see what is a trend. This guy might have sucked in this game at throwing a deep ball, but was he on target the other four that I don't have to, like, that's really not that big of an issue. Maybe he had an off game. I don't understand. I don't get how we have some people who do weekly updates. It's like, that's too much at once. Like there's no way we can consume what we can do without having a huge body of work. But I think we have
the problem
four or five games on all these guys now. And I think that's a good enough to start talking about it a little bit.
The problem with the media circus and 24-hour news cycles, you constantly need new stuff. You know, working an NFL job, I know this, you know, you do power rankings every single week. I was doing positional rankings every single week last year, and it is very much a what have you done for me lately type of deal. And so if a guy has a huge game, oh, we're shooting him up the rankings, because that's what the people want to see. And it's really unfortunate because you can't really sit down objectively with a clear conscience and say, I don't know yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how good these guys really are yet until I get a much larger sample size. I think we have, like you said, I think we have a decent sample size now to talk about some of these guys. And I think the three in particular that we're going to talk about, I think we have enough for the one for sure. And probably enough for two of them. And I think the third one is what we really need to see more of, but even he has his own limitations. And let's just get down right to it, because we got to do helmet stickers this episode too.
Right, Cam, we're kind of beating around the bush here.
Cam Ward, Miami's quarterback, a fifth-year guy, Incarnate Word to Wazoo to Miami. And he is Emmanuel Acho a couple of years ago talked about Justin Herbert being a social media quarterback. That is false, and it always has been false. Now, Justin Herbert may not have lived up to some of the hype that some people gave him. I mean, I thought he was a great prospect, but not an infallible one. And I think he's been a really good quarterback in a not so great situation sometimes in LA, but he's doing fine. He's not a social media quarterback because there aren't really the dopamine hits with him. If anything, I would like him to be more aggressive.
Right.
No, Zach Wilson was a social media quarterback. Zach Wilson's theatrics at BYU are the reason why he was the second overall pick. It wasn't because he was a good quarterback prospect, because he really, truly was not. It was a lot of heavy personnel, a lot of 50-50 balls leveraged away or right at defenders, where his big 6'3", 6'4" wide receivers were able to high point the football. And he did a good job of not turning the ball over because he had 6'4" wide receivers who were able to high point the football. But he wasn't good in structure, and he was terrible in the red zone. And so we should have had these red flags, and we can't ignore those red flags. And we have the same red flags with Cam Ward. Now, Cam Ward is a supercharged version of Zach Wilson because he is the more explosive athlete, and he does give you more on the ground than Zach Wilson does. Now, he doesn't give you what Jalen Milrow does or Jaden Daniels or Lamar Jackson. He's not that type of athlete, but he is good enough to be a threat on the ground. The problem is he is very much a social media quarterback. Everybody talks about the heroics of that football game in this past week against Virginia Tech. Absolutely. He was great down the stretch. He made some unbelievable plays down the stretch to win them that football game. He was also partially responsible for the reason why they were trailing in that football game. He had three turnovers. He had three turnovers.
Two of which led to the ball being in his own territory. where like the defense forced, well, the Virginia Tech didn't get it on a fourth and short. And then I think they just kicked a field goal on the first possession of the game. They only got, or no, they scored on the first possession of the game, but mm-hmm. the defense only gave up like 10 total points off of turnover in that game.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first interception we'll talk about was cover three leverage. The corner was in cover three leverage, high and outside, and it was the same exact concept from the outside receiver as it was on the touchdown, that like bang eight route that he ran, that he made a fantastic throw on that first touchdown. That's exactly the throw that he needed to make on that exact play. But instead, for some reason, a corner with zone eyes in cover three, he just thought that he could get the ball there, and the corner with zone eyes wouldn't see him throwing the corner route,
yeah,
to Xavier Restrepo, and it was a horrific decision. And that wasn't even the worst interception he threw in that game, because again, in his own red zone, he threw a pass right to the apex player on a wheel route, and I just have no idea what he was looking at on that play, because there was nothing post snap. There was no post snap movement. There was no rotation. It wasn't a bait coverage. They were just matching mm-hmm. the stack.
Yeah.
He threw it right to the apex defender. These are inexcusable decisions from a fifth year quarterback. Mm-hmm. On top of, and I wrote this in my article, he's got like a fumble in every game that he's ever played.
He has 32 career fumbles. He does not take
good care of the football. How many 32, is it?
32
career 32 fumbles. Career fumbles. And that's
actually, there's probably more because I have Fox Sports up. Fox Sport doesn't have his true freshman season in Carded Word charted. So it's 21 through 24. So his sophomore season in Carded Word, his two seasons at Wazoo, and then his one.
Well, I can tell you exactly what it is because I have it in this article that I wrote. Yeah.
And he's lost 15 of those 32 in the last 4 years. And I think that drives me bananas because, like, people will try to, like, people say, like, well, that's easy to coach out of a player. But, like, it's his fifth year. It's clearly not easy to coach out of him. It's his fifth year, and he's still doing this stuff. And, yeah, that's his first fumble of this season. So, like, maybe he deserves a little bit of a grace, but, like, for a player who lost 8 fumbles last year, I don't think he deserves a lot of grace for carrying the football like a potato down at his waist with one hand while he's trying to step up and navigate a murky pocket. It's irresponsible. Yeah. It's completely irresponsible.
And I lost my train of thought. That's unfortunate. Yeah, I completely lost my train of thought there.
Like, there's a lot to like about Cam Ward. Like,
oh, I know what I was going to say. The one thing that I think we can talk to about a lot with him, the fumbles are 47, by the way. 47 is what I have here for fumbles.
That means he lost 13 as his true freshman season as well.
So PFF has 9 fumbles in 2020, 14 in 21, 9 in 22, 14 in 23, and then the 1 this year. The one thing I will say, his pressure to sack rate
is way down,
which is something that we talk about a lot, has been over 20 for his career, but it's way down so far this year. It's like 11%. It's below Carson Beck, and it is half of what Jalen Milroe is.
Yeah. And his turnover worthy plays are way down too. Again, they're just now getting into ACC play.
Exactly.
And so, and again, they play Florida, but like, Florida's
bad.
Might be the worst coach Power 4 team in the country. And yeah. I use that hyperbole a lot. Like, they might be the worst P4 team to do this. That I use that hyperbole a lot. But, like, Florida literally might be the worst coached Power 4 team in the country.
I don't want to make it sound like I don't want to beat him down. I mean, the thing with Cam Ward is the arm is there.
Yeah.
The arm is there. And the one thing that I really liked from this football game in particular was the layering of passes that he had in this football game. He's obviously has the freaky sort of explosiveness out of his hand. And he's got all of the arm angles that you would like. Very flexible arm. He can throw from really any sort of platform as well. He's somebody who, when they talk about making all the throws, he can almost make all of the throws. The one throw that he can't seem to make is one that you actually brought up to me, charted. He made it in the Virginia Tech game. But tell us about the trend with Cam Ward that you've never seen before.
It's bizarre. So, like, this is the J.J. McCarthy, Mitchell Trubisky thing. They can't throw left. They can't throw left. They can't throw left. Mitchell Trubisky is well, very well known for it. And then J.J. was the same way last year out of Michigan. Like, for whatever reason, his plant foot could not get right where he was. He was just shooting strays, throwing left. Ward, for whatever reason, all of his misses, not all, like, probably 80% of his misses that I've charted are coming from the same side as his arm. So as he's, when he's throwing right, it's bizarre. And I don't know if that's because he has this mentality that I'm throwing it. Like, he has the mechanics down where he knows how to throw across his body or behind his body. And so when he is set or he does have his base, like, those same mechanics are kind of like, but for some odd reason, when he is in structure with a set base, throwing to the same side of his arm is when he's most inaccurate. And it's bizarre to me. I don't think I've ever seen it before. I'm going to keep tracking. It might be nothing. It could be nothing. But, like, through five games, it's something. And that's a pretty big sample size.
And so one thing that I've seen from a couple of different quarterbacks, and Lamar Jackson was one that I kind of charted back in the day that was famous for it, was the shorter right throws. So the throws within 10 yards to the right side of the field. One that for a right-handed quarterback can be tougher at times because you are kind of throwing across your body because you are stepping out and planting and then coming back across. And so a lot of the times what happens is quarterbacks sort of short arm it. And then you get kind of skippers, the throws that first baseman have to pick off the dirt. Yeah. You kind of get a lot of those in those situations, or guy that's not able to actually come through at all. And it sails a little bit. So I have seen inaccuracies to the short right area of the field, but like the entire right sideline, which is what we saw from your charting, is really peculiar. Overall, there's a lot to like about Cam Ward, but the quarterback, and I talk about this all the time, the flashy stuff is incredible. And the flashy stuff is what makes a good quarterback a great quarterback. It's what elevates a quarterback. But quarterbacks at the NFL level are living 75% to 85% of the time within 2.5 seconds, getting the ball out from within the pocket, within structure. You have to be able to do it. And we're not seeing that with Cam Ward. Even now in Miami, it is a lot of stuff that we kind of saw with Justin Fields, where it's a lot of downfield, a lot of intermediate concepts, trying to hold the ball for a long time, get him opportunities to push the ball downfield because he can show off his arm. But there's not a lot of quick game. The stuff that is quick is all structured screens and things like that. So there's not a lot of, the defense is bringing five or the defense is bringing six. And this is something that we saw with Jalen Milroe against Georgia, the opposite, making the right decision and finding your hot, or just having a hot in general, because I feel like a lot of the times when I'm watching Miami's offense, there's no hot when there's a blitz. It's just, I'll run around and try to create something for a couple of seconds until someone gets open. And so for me, part of it is an offensive issue, but part of it is I just kind of think that he's mostly the same guy that we saw at Wazoo, probably the same guy that we saw in Incarnate Word. And we're in, for me with him, we're in like Malik Willis territory, where it's, or Hendon Hooker. Draft him, stash him, and see if you can develop him with good coaching at the NFL level. Because we saw it with Malik Willis, a terrible performer in Tennessee with a horrific offensive coaching staff around him. Went to Green Bay and has played really well when he was thrust into that situation. We might not see him again with Jordan Love back now, but we at least have hope that Malik Willis might be able to figure it out eventually. I think you need to have that same sort of hope with Cam Ward. Not a first round guy to me. Not somebody who I want starting within 1 to 2, maybe even 3 years in the NFL. And then you hope, you draft him in the third round behind an entrenched starter, somebody who is going to either cost you too much money that you don't want to pay, or is like a middling NFL starter who you don't want to pay, or somebody who is aging out. And that's really what you want. You want to hope and pray that he develops.
Yep, I agree. I think this is kind of where I mean, and he's played pretty well this year for them.
The tools are there.
Coming into the season, this is kind of the Spencer Rattler, Derek Carr situation, where you think like that's a high tool, like high end tools with Rattler, and kind of like, well, what is left of Derek Carr? But now Derek Carr's playing kind of well this year, so
yeah,
we'll see if that continues. But yeah, I completely agree. I'm again have been skeptical because I think we know who Cam Ward is, and then when you take a look at like the turnover worthy plays percentage doubled in this game, the time to throw went up by 0.3 seconds in this game, which is significant. Pressure to sack jumped way up in this game. Like, it was a 0% the last two games, and it was 90% this game with four sacks. Yeah. And so, you know, now that we're getting into some ACC play, and again, this is kind of what happened with Wazzu last year. Like, I want to go back to 2023, and then we can move on from Cam Ward because we spent a lot of time talking about him. But, like, his first four games were stellar. Colorado State, Wisconsin, Northern Colorado, Oregon State. And then Oregon State is obviously Pac-12 play, but then he got into Pac-12 play, and it's pretty bad from there on out. As far as turnover worthy plays are concerned, pressure to sack is through the roof in Pac-12 play. So, I mean, time to throw in most of these games is 2.8 or higher. So it's
all of his interceptions came in the back half of the season last year.
And the turnover or the big time throws is way down too. So, yeah. It's just something to keep an eye on. But even if he goes out and torches teams, like it's how he's doing it. Like people will point to Patrick Mahomes. It's like, you can't comp to the one out of 32 NFL quarterbacks who can do this thing. And Patrick Mahomes does it so sparingly. 85% of the time, Patrick Mahomes is getting the ball out of his hands because he knows what he's seeing pre-snap, post-snap rotation, and the ball's out of his hands. It is that 5% where he is doing the chaotic stuff that makes him incredible and potentially a historic quarterback, but Cam Ward lives in that 80% of the time, and that's where even like Caleb Williams is having a kind of a little bit of a rougher adjustment to the NFL, because Caleb Williams probably lived in it 65-70% of the time at USC. So
yeah,
we got to figure out how to do some stuff in structure. But
I think maybe we should push the other two for after draft.
Ooh, I like that.
Tomorrow's episode.
I like that.
So we'll talk about the other two for after draft, because we do need to get to helmets because we talked about Cam Ward for quite a while. But
we did.
I just wanted to bring this up real quick. I wrote about Caleb Williams last year, the way that he kind of shaped up against prospects like Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence. And I talked about the dangers of chasing the dragon, which is like chasing the Zach Wilson, chasing the big play. And I feel like that's kind of where we're at with Cam Ward overall. But let's get to helmet stickers, because it's an interesting one this week. But first of all, I just want to give a helmet sticker out. And I think we both want to give a helmet sticker out. And everybody in the world should give a helmet sticker out to Ashton Jeanty. Because I don't think we're going to give him one this week. But
we can't keep giving those to the same guys. Yeah.
The dude's the best player in college football, right? Well, not the best player.
Maybe Travis Hunter, but yeah.
Yeah, the one of the two most impactful guys at their position in college football right now, just head and shoulders above what everybody else is doing at the position. And then I think the other guy that we could just bring up quickly is Jalen Milroe for the performance against Georgia. Huge performance against Georgia, you know, the best team that the best defense they're going to face all year. So two guys that deserve them, but we're not going to give them to them.
Well, let's throw a third guy that we're not going to give it to either, because we've talked about him on every single freaking episode. It's Harold Fannin Jr., who almost dropped two bills in Old Dominion, including a touchdown on unbelievable. Oh my God. It was an
everything happening. I didn't even see that he went off.
He dropped 192 on Old Dominion on 12 catches on 12 targets. Including down the sideline, he made an incredible adjustment on a flag route and then hauled it in over his opposite shoulder and then ran it in for a touchdown. Yeah, unbelievable. But again, we talk about him all the time, so he's not going to get a helmet sticker either.
All right, who is your first helmet sticker, Corey?
Yeah, I want to turn to the Kentucky Wildcats for a second, and this is kind of a joint helmet sticker. The Kentucky Wildcats quarterback play is pretty bad. They've got Brock Vandegrift playing for him right now, a Georgia transfer, former five-star recruit who just never saw the field at Georgia because of all the guys, Stetson Bennett, Carson Beck now, like, so he transferred out finally, and I think he's a fifth year already, and this is his first year starting, so he was at Georgia for a while, might be a fourth year. These two wide receivers won the game for Kentucky against Ole Miss, and I want to give a joint helmet sticker to Dane Key and Berrion Brown. So for one, Dane Key is 6'2" and 210 pounds, dude, and this dude's a good wide receiver, and for the first time, they really got targets all season with Kentucky because, again, quarterback play's kind of been abysmal. He had over 100 yards and a touchdown in this game. And then Berrion Brown, I think they could still do a better job. Again, might be the fastest player in college football. He's the wide receiver I chose for explosiveness in our build a prospect wide receiver. And Berrion Brown in this game finished with like 80 some yards, but really up until the 4th and 7 with the game on the line, he had 4 catches for 23 yards or something like that. 4th and 7, game on the line. Mark Stoops dials up a go ball to Berrion Brown, hauls it in, runs for 63 yards, catch and run for 63 yards, keeps Kentucky in that game. And then they come out on top. So I think I want to give a joint helmet sticker to Dane Key and Berrion Brown. Again, neither guy could come out this year, but they are both draft eligible, and I think that they both deserve to be rewarded for their efforts in this game.
I did not know that you were going to give a helmet sticker to a Kentucky player. You ended up giving 1 to 2, which I think is a little bit cheating, but it's okay.
My bad.
We already gave out 3 helmet stickers to people we're not giving helmet stickers out to. I'm going to stick with Kentucky, and I'm going to go to the defensive side of the ball, and I really wanted to give this guy a helmet sticker because I wrote poorly of what I saw from him in the first 4 weeks of the college football season when I was talking about my fatties. My fat leets is probably the better way to say it, but the guys in the trenches on the defensive side of the ball, the one techniques, and this is Dione Walker, who had, I believe he ended up having 2 sacks. He had 4 pressures. He had an unbelievable pick play that opened up an opportunity for the edge rusher to swoop in on the game and make another sack. He was a menace on the defensive interior for this Kentucky Wildcats team. And he's somebody who had a ton of pass rush production last year at 340 pounds. I think that his legs are kind of skinny, which you wouldn't suspect from a 340 pounder, but he is also listed at 6'6". The broadcast said 6'8". So a large, large human being, somebody who absolutely loved basketball. And you can see he is a very good athlete for his size, but at 6'8", he also loses the leverage battle quite a bit, just naturally. So naturally a very sturdy player, naturally doesn't carry a mass of bad body weight because he's 6'8", at 340. So it's not that terrible. And he's a good athlete. He's explosive. And I wanted to mostly give him a helmet sticker because I did critique him quite harshly on my piece about one technique. Or in my scouting notebook is what it was, but yeah.
Love it. You go first this time on your second helmet.
Yeah, my second guy. Listen, Ashton Cheney had like 600 yards after contact this week, but the second guy who had a ton of yards after contact this week in a ranked, against a ranked opponent after getting blown out by BYU the week before, and he didn't have a bad game against BYU, but this is a running back for the Kansas State. Again, Wildcats, DJ Giddens, who is a fun football player to watch. He averaged 10 yards after contact in this game. He forced 5 missed tackles. He had 150 yards after contact in this game, 15 rushes, 187 yards, a touchdown, 4 rushes of 15 plus yards, an 80% breakaway rate. Like, this dude was nuts in this football game when he was on the field. He also had 1 reception for 22 yards. And this Kansas State team, I don't understand them. Like, they blew out Arizona. Then they get blown out by BYU, who, like, BYU might be a pretty good football team, but, like, I don't think that they're the cream of the crop, even in the Big 12, which we don't think is very good. And so, like, what is this football team? What is Kansas State? And this guy comes out and absolutely dominates a running back matchup who Ollie Gordon had a very good first half and then obviously couldn't do much in the second half because they were getting blown out and they needed to throw the ball. And Alan Bowman is a whole other discussion. But, DJ Giddens, somebody who a ton of fun to watch in the first couple of weeks of the season here, and I'm excited to see what happens in more fake football, which is what I call the Big 12.
Yeah, that conference is something else. It's like the Anchorman scene with all the different newscasters.
When I watch Cincinnati's defense line up 5 guys in the box on a 3rd and 4 against, I think it was Houston, a 3rd and 4 against Houston with a mobile quarterback, and they had 6 guys. It was, you know, 11 personnel tight end on the line, and they had 5 guys. Obviously, Smith is going to run it for a first down. It's exactly what he did. Just abolish the Big 12.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of Cincinnati, I also just realized all of my helmet stickers are from the Cat family at their mascots as well. But that Cincinnati defense is where I'm going next for my next helmet sticker, Bearcats. And I'm going to go with defensive tackle Dante Corleone here for my second helmet sticker. He's doing some nutty stuff. And we need to bring talk about a couple things, because over the summer, this guy was medically shut down for having blood clots in his lungs. And he was a pretty highly ranked pre-draft defensive tackle coming in as an absolute wrecking ball against the run as a one tech who is incredibly difficult to displace, unbelievably difficult to displace. He's coming into this season now, and he's only played four games. He missed, I think, one or the first game of the season, and he's been able to play since then. And he is on a tear as a pass rusher, which is completely different than what we've known from Dante Corleone. And he deserves to be mentioned for that. And in this game against Texas Tech, again, the Bearcats, they lost close from like 44-41 against Texas Tech. He had four total pressures in this game, three hurries, three tackles, two stop tackles. So two tackles that resulted in negative plays. And he's doing it all from one tech still. I mean, 41 of his 48 snaps that he played in this game are from one tech. And so that's not always the easiest thing to do compared to lining up over a guard and having a little clearer path to the quarterback. But Dante Corleone has 16 pressures already this year. He had 17 all of last year, 16 all of his first season at Cincinnati as well in 2022. So he's already set pretty much at his career high. He's one off of his career high in pressures on 100 pass rush snaps compared to doing that on 232 pass rush snaps a year ago. So he's taking that next step. And again, maybe the blood clots thing kind of throws off his draft prospect status here. Again, he's eligible to go back to school if he wants to, but this dude's a day two talent as a defensive tackle, as both a run defender. Now he's showing something against the pass as well. So Dante Corleone gets my helmet sticker.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
He's a meatball. Yeah.
He's a meatball. He's very, very round. Yes, very girthy. Round.
Yeah.
6'1". I mean, he's you know, well leveraged naturally is what I like to call these guys.
You cannot move that guy out of the A-gap. No.
He is a lot of fun. My third one is the first time we are going this route. It's a specialist.
Ooh.
And it is a kicker for a team that lost. But I wanted to bring this up. Virginia Tech Hokies, John Love, kicked 250 yarders in this football game. And I want to bring up the 250 yarders he hit was a 52 yarder and a 57 yarder before half. And I want to bring up his stats. He has never missed an extra point. He is overall 63 of 63. He is 31 of 35 for career for field goals. And he's played mostly in the past 2 years, but he is 2 of 2. From 50 plus yards. Those were the first 250 yarders he has ever attempted. He is 9 of 10 from 40 to 49 yards. And then he is 11 of 13 from 30 to 39 yards. So this is a guy who is, I believe, in his final year of eligibility. And somebody who is really kicking the ball well. And I don't like evaluate kickers. It's not something that I do. I don't care. Abolish kicking, in my opinion, but somebody who has been really accurate and was a big reason why Virginia Tech almost won this football game by nailing 250 plus yarders in this game.
I love it. A little kicker dialogue's never hurt anybody. So I love it. I love it.
I'm doing that all for my buddy Ollie at PFN because he is a Ollie Hodges and huge kick. I mean, obviously he's from the UK, so he's somebody who likes kicking. So
yeah, they do a lot of that over there with their Gaelic football and and their soccer and whatnot, their football. But yeah. My last helmet sticker, again, going to the Cat family, is a Nittany Lion, Penn State. So we had talked on our Dafter drafts either last week or 2 weeks ago about how disappointing this edge class has kind of been. And one of those names has been Abdul Carter, who made the transition to full-time edge, was Dane Brugler's second overall prospect coming into the season. If I'm not mistaken. So like one or two, or he's either two.
Yeah, he was two.
Yeah, he was two. Just because, again, he's a Penn State athlete, unbelievably explosive off the edge, super flexible. Like, he's built in a lab. But through the first three games against two MAC schools, including that, in West Virginia, one total sack. Not a lot of production. This game against Illinois, a game that Dalton and I talked a lot about last week, as kind of an exciting matchup because we knew Illinois had an identity and we kind of thought Penn State were kind of frauds. He put the Penn State defense on his back in this game. And they won a 21-7. Not really shootout in this game. And again, we can talk about this quarterback class and that quarterback that a lot of people want to hype up for his tools that just can't hit water if he fell out of a boat right now. And it's kind of the same thing from last year. But Abdul Carter in this game doubled his sack total. Well, tripled it actually. He had two sacks in this game, now up to three sacks on the year, eight pressures.
I don't know how you get eight pressures against the offense. It's insane because they get the ball out quick, quite a bit.
Yes, they do. Including the game sealing strip sack as well. Like a last drive of the game there, he had that strip sack that forced the ball back into Penn State Penn State's hands, obviously. So just unbelievable. Eight pressures, six hurries, two sacks, four stop tackles as well. Just like unbelievable production coming from him. So Abdul Carter, maybe this is a trend up. Maybe he's just now turning it on that they're in Big Ten play. We'll see if this is a step in the right direction. But Abdul Carter gets the last talent sticker here.
Yeah, man, he's a rocket ship. There's guys, and you see it a lot on the defense. Well, you don't see it a lot at all. But guys who can practically teleport to the ball when they are closing, and he's one of those guys. And the other one is another Penn State guy, and he plays for the Dallas Cowboys. Just freak athletes that come to Penn State. That strength and conditioning program is elite. So those are the helmet stickers, and we talked about Cam Ward for about 15 minutes there. Yeah, so
we
did that. We're going to get to Jalen Milroe and Carson Beck in the next episode. We are going to get again to Ashton Deonte in the next episode of Daft or Draft. We will be back on Wednesday. I love you guys.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe, like vintage-style tees, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country, and jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.